Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Tulsa American Film Festival continues at the Circle Cinema, Gilcrease Museum, and several other locations around the city. The festival, now in its third year, is devoted to independent work with an emphasis on Native American, Latino, Oklahoma-based, and student filmmakers. I'm joined today by festival director, producer, director, and writer Ben Arredondo, who will give us an overview of the festival, along with one of the filmmakers at this year's festival, the filmmaker behind the new documentary film Man Killer, which makes its Oklahoma premiere tonight at 8 at the Circle Cinema. Valerie Redhorse Mull is the director and producer of the documentary of the late former principal chief of the Cherokee Nation, Wilma Man Killer. Redhorse Mull's work spans two decades, and her films include Naturally Native, which was a Sundance Film Festival selection, True Whispers, the story of the Navajo Code Talkers, and Choctaw Code Talkers, both of which aired on PBS. Man Killer screens tonight at 8 o'clock at The Circle as a part of the Tulsa American Film Festival. Valerie and Ben, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Ben, let's start with you. The American Film Festival is underway, has been underway with preview events prior to this week. So what's happening this for the rest of the weekend as far as the film festival?
Well, we start Wednesday. We're in our day three, and tonight's a big night, which is, you know, with our other guests here, you know, the reason she's here is our premiere of Man Killer. The documentary is our big night. We have a panel today about the ins and outs of low-budget horror filmmaking at the Circle Cinema.
Uh-huh.
A lot of, you know, horror films, you know, get made in Oklahoma, so...
We have that subgenre sort of popular in the state.
Yeah, and they're fun films to make. And, you know, so we're doing that today at the Circle Cinema at 5:30. And it's part of the Tulsa Film Mixer Series, the Tulsa Office of Film, Music, Art, and Culture. And then we have a short film program tonight also. And those are always a lot of fun. You know, our short film program on Wednesday night was heavily attended. And people like to, you know, see a lot of different things, you know, in that program block. So definitely that'll be at Circle Cinema as well. And then today's Friday the 13th. And tonight is at 10 o'clock at Circle, and it's a free screening. We're showing Poltergeist 2. It's the last film of our Will Sampson retrospective. So before the festival, we had a lot of pre-festival screenings, and we showed two Will Sampson films, and this is the last one that's being played on Friday the 13th.
Now, for those who don't know Will Sampson was an Indian actor. He's in that film. He's very famous for playing a Comanche chief in The Outlaw Josie Wales. He was in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and really, I want to say one of the most important Native American actors that broke out of the stereotypical roles. Wouldn't you say to Valerie?
Oh, absolutely. I think watching him in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest was sort of a seminal moment for me, you know, when I was young. And then I had the opportunity to work with his son, Tim, and some stuff. So, yeah, I mean, Oklahoma should be very proud of him.
And there's a Native American focus to the festival as well, correct?
There is, yes. In fact, our Native American... half of our Native American program is screened at the Gilcrease Museum, and it's also free and open to the public. And there's various Native short film program, and on Saturday, and a feature film as well at 3 o'clock. And then on Sunday, we are showing another feature film at 3 o'clock at the Gilcrease.
Yeah, that's one of the things of the film festival. I think you've been expanding the locations. You had a screening last night on the Guthrie Green, correct?
Yeah, we screened Rumblefish. It's the 35th anniversary of the production of Rumblefish. And we had Doug Claiborne here, who producer of Rumblefish. And yeah, we had a really great turnout at Guthrie Green. Right before that, at the Woody Guthrie Center, Doug talked about working with Francis Ford Coppola and telling all the stories and stuff, and it's really fun.
Yeah. Well, let me turn to my other guest, Valerie Redhorse Mull, the director and producer of the documentary Man Killer. Now, you've done a couple films the last several films have focused on the Navajo and then the Choctaw Code Talkers, which I have to admit, I saw a bit of the Choctaw Code Talker films a few years ago, and I never knew about the Choctaw Code Talkers. I knew about the Navajo. I knew about the Comanche Code Talkers, because we had a man in our community, Charles Chibitty, who was one of the Comanche Code Talkers. Sure. I didn't know there were Choctaw Code Talkers.
You know, and I knew very little about them before we did the film. So the way that journey worked is my executive producer, Gail Ann Hurd, has been my producing partner on these documentaries for almost 20 years. And She's an amazing force in Hollywood. And she had contacted me to do the Navajo Code Talker film. Originally, we were looking at a feature, a narrative acted drama. And we met with the Navajo men and they said, no, 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 we want you to tell our real story. So that was our first foray into documentary filmmaking, and it won many awards and was an amazing experience. But then we were contacted by someone from the Choctaw Nation here in Oklahoma who had seen the film and said, you did a great job on the Navajo story, but we were the first code talkers in World War I. And I have to admit, I have a great education behind me, but I didn't learn that much about World War I. I don't think many of us really know the details. And so we learned as we went, and that was an amazing journey because when we did the Navajo code talkers, fortunately, many of those men were still alive and we were able to interview them. And there was no one left from World War I, and, right. and it was digging into archives, and, which was good prep for what we had to do on the Mankiller film. But it's always a challenge when your subjects are no longer with you.
Tell me about the making of the Mankiller film. Why make this film now?
Well, that's a great question. And a lot of it is just turning out to be an incredible sort of moment in time and the way everything worked out. Wilma Mankiller, who those of your listeners who might not know, she was the first woman elected chief of the Cherokee Nation back in the 80s. And she passed away in 2010. And we had done, Gail and I had done those two documentaries for PBS. And in 2011, a film was being made here in Oklahoma called The Cherokee Word for Water, which was an independent feature about one segment of Mankiller's life. And at that time, PBS said, you know, I think we need an entire film on a nonfiction on her life, and you and Gail are probably the right duo to do that. Would you do that? And we said, of course. And this was in 2011. So we thought the film would be out in 2013, maybe, you know. Uh-huh. And as some documentaries go, we just kept going back and realizing we needed more story. We needed more archival footage. We needed more photos. We needed more information. We needed more money. And that's a whole nother story in itself. But by the time we completed it, so it is listed as a 2017 film. This is the Oklahoma premiere.
Right.
Her message is more important than ever and more relevant than ever. So we're actually happy that it took that long because we actually just came from Congress where we screened this for Congress. And it's an important message for Washington, D.C. to hear.
Yeah. Now, you said, having seen the film, there is an amazing amount of archival footage, but really, you know, very few of the actors that were active in her life are around. I mean, there's some, but as far as telling her story through other voices, there's just not a whole lot of footage there, is there?
Well, we were able to find archival footage that went back pretty far into her life. You know, one of the most interesting areas of her life in terms of a filmatic portion was when she was relocated to San Francisco. And so we went to find her friends and colleagues. And what was interesting is we found archival footage from the 60s, but it's not high def, you know. And so yeah. to marry everything into a high def piece was challenging for our editor. But I feel like our research and development team did a great job in finding, even if people had passed away, John Trudell was mm-hmm. an example. We really wanted to interview him, and he passed away while we were filming, but we still found some footage of him. So I think as
now
a
explain who that is.
Oh, John Trudell is one of our foremost activists who was on the Alcatraz Island with Wilma. He was one of the leaders. He did the radio show from Alcatraz right. every morning, and we were able to find footage of him. I think he was maybe 19 in the footage. So, you know, it always thrills me when I see that part of the film.
Yeah, and that really, the story tells, for Oklahomans, you know, Wilma Mankiller is a pretty well-known person and well-known personality, but a lot of her California work may not be that well-known. I think anybody who's followed her knew that Alcatraz, the occupation of Alcatraz, was a major moment in awakening her own political activism. But there's also another story in there about her work for I'm not even sure if it was a federally recognized, I guess it was a federally recognized tribe, but it had land stolen stolen from them, the Pitt River Tribe, which is actually a series of tribes.
In Northern California.
Yeah, Northern California. And she was very much involved with that for 4 or 5 years.
And finding footage of that was interesting. And we made a choice as the filmmakers to leave the footage as we found it instead of trying to make it into high res or digitizing it or colorizing it. And so I worried at first because some of the footage is very rough, But audiences,
well, it's all done on videotape, right? And videotape is just doesn't hold up well.
Yeah, or I mean, some of it was 16mm the news agencies, and we just had to deal with what, and some of it's home movies, you know. So, but the Pitt River experience was great. It was, their land had been occupied by Pacific Gas and Electric. And back then, you know, you just didn't go against a corporation like that. But they protested. They got arrested. She was very much a part of that. And how that relates to her coming back to Oklahoma is she really brought a grassroots mentality of, we can stand up for ourselves. We don't need to depend on the federal government. And that was really sort of earth-shattering. No one here was really thinking like that in Oklahoma. You know, everything hits the coast first. And so she really brought back this activism that was, it was gentle activism in the sense that she was so kind, and she was a uniter. She was not a divisive leader. And so her story, I knew who Wilma Mankiller was, obviously, but her story blossomed as we started really understanding her message. And it's a message the world needs to hear today.
Yeah. One of the first projects she attempted when she came back was a water project.
Exactly. She did the Bell Water Project, and that was a self-help project. And what was so interesting about that is she was able to find funding for the actual pipes, but that was it. And so she decided to just organize the community, and she got everyone working, men and women, and a lot of women. And I love the part of our film that shows the women with the bulldozer and the jackhammer. And so, you know, the message is really, we can do things for ourselves, and we can believe in ourselves. And if we come together as a community or as a country, we can get a lot done. And I really wish Washington, D.C. would hear that message now.
Well, let's hear a little clip from that section of the Bell Self-Help Project, which, to give people some background, Bell was a small community in the Cherokee Nation. As far as I know, it had no running water. No clean water.
Yeah, no running water. And Wilma asked them what they wanted, which was sort of unique, because back then it was pointed out most political leaders sort of told you what you needed or decided what you wanted. And she really went into homes and worked with the people and said, what is it that you need? And they wanted water.
Yeah. And there's this amazing footage, which you'll hear, you won't be able to see, but you'll be able to hear. And it's literally the community turning out, digging holes for the pipeline, putting the pipe in, putting it together, and covering it back up. Let's hear that. Okay, this is from the documentary film Mankiller, which will receive its Oklahoma premiere tonight at 8 o'clock at the Circle Cinema as a part of the Tulsa American Film Festival.
For quite some time, people didn't want to meet even, but she persisted and just came back until they did.
And each family will.
I banked everything I ever believed on that project. Even when people were saying, those people aren't going to show up, half of them are on welfare, they're going to volunteer to build their own water line and middle of the summer, in the middle of the winter, and I just knew they would.
Things just started rolling, and you did, yes, you did in the ditch, but you didn't mind.
Wilma made it happen. She'd get in there and do what needs to be done. She brought the communities back together.
Women and kids and old men digging trenches, the fact that they could do it themselves and that Wilma had faith in them made the major difference.
Reintroducing the concept of hope and the concept of self-determination, not just at the nation level, but at the community level, bringing families and communities together.
That's from the documentary Mankiller. My guest today is the director and producer of the documentary, Valerie Redhorse Mole. And we're also joined by Ben Arredondo, the festival director of the Tulsa American Film Festival. Opened a couple of days ago and is continuing tonight, tomorrow, and all day tomorrow and Sunday at various locations around the city. And what are some of the highlights, besides Mankiller, of the festival this year? What would you say the big highlights?
Well, tomorrow morning, we are fortunate to be hosting Trisha Wood, who is from Oklahoma. She's from Stillwater. She was the casting director for La La Land, and she's like a very sought after casting director in Hollywood, and we're lucky to have her. So we're having a conversation with her, Q&A. It's slash brunch at the Circle Cinema. That's at 10:30, and that's free and open to the public.
So for those who don't know the way Hollywood works, a casting director, I assume from the title, they're the people that sort of look at people and put people in front of the producers and directors.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. And it goes anywhere from the top talent to, you know, throughout the rest of the cast. And so they're a pretty important part of the film process. You know, you know, especially in the Hollywood, you know, where, you know, casting is just can be, you know, the right role, but also
or make and break the production as far as just the money.
Exactly. Right? Yes.
And I would add, in Hollywood, you don't see a lot of minorities and Native Americans in those sorts of roles that are behind the camera making decisions. So we absolutely applaud that, because, you know, sometimes it just takes someone like that to think of a nondescript role might be right for a Native American actor. And that's how we see more diverse faces.
And let me ask both of you, since the Native American focus of the festival, you know, for many years, it was very common to see Hispanic actors play Native Americans. You know, I mean, the idea of an Asian character being played by an Asian, a Native American character being played by a Native American, or Hispanic character being played by a Hispanic actor was all in doubt. You know, it just depended on what the casting director wanted. Has that changed now?
You know, it has. And I give a lot of credit to an Oklahoma gentleman who's passed on, but a gentleman named Bob Hicks, who grew up in Oklahoma, came to Hollywood and started a group called First Americans in the Arts. And one of the producers on Mankiller, Don Jackson, was his co-founder. And their main focus was to ensure that Native Americans played Native Americans, to highlight Native American actors. That was back when West Studi was starting out. And I mean, we all are really grateful for that group, because you need an advocate in Hollywood or you will not be known or seen.
Yeah, I can remember some very famous Hispanic actors playing Native Americans for many, many years. Yeah. My guest of Valerie Redhorse Mull, director and producer of the documentary Mankiller, which will be receiving its Oklahoma premiere tonight at 8 at the Circle Cinema as a part of the Tulsa American Film Festival. As you began researching the story, now you're Cherokee, right?
I am. And my ancestry is Cherokee. My father was born and raised in Tahlequah.
Yeah. So you know her story very well. Were there any surprises?
Oh, absolutely. I knew she was a great leader. I have never lived in Oklahoma because my father was brought out on the same relocation program that Wilma was into San Francisco, where he stayed. So I was born in San Francisco. And then I went to UCLA Film School. So I'm really a California born and bred. So when we started researching Wilma, what we didn't realize was the depth of her servant leadership attitude. I learned she didn't even use her credit card that was given to her as a political official because she didn't want to spend the people's money. She believed that you needed to serve your constituents and to be part of your constituents. And she didn't have any sort of anger or animosity towards opposition. She believed they all had a good point because she loved human beings. She loved people. So one of the points in the film that we brought out is when she launched gaming, for example, which was, as if you live in Oklahoma, you know, that's a huge part of American Indian economic development now. Here we have the Cherokees and the Chickasaws and many other tribes.
Right.
And so it was a tough decision for her. And she listened to her opponents because she wanted to understand the fears. And the fear was that it would cannibalize their own people, that the Indian people themselves would become addicted to gambling. So she said, you know, we need to do it for economic development, but I'm going to start at the far edge of the reservation. So she started with a bingo hall in Roland. And I thought to myself, what if all our politicians could use that as a template, listen to your opponents, and then try to incorporate that into a solution as opposed to just fighting and not listening?
There was a great interview you did with, I believe he was somewhat of a spiritual leader for the Cherokee, but
yes,
also politically diametrically opposed, yet he had this enormous respect for her. And even though he said, you know, I probably wasn't going to vote for her, she sought me out and asked my counsel.
She asked so many people around her. I think that's a sign of a good leader. That was Pastor Duke Pickup, I think, who she sought his counsel, and he said, as a pastor, I was opposed to gaming, but I understood and I supported her decision, knowing that she needed to do that. The other gentleman was a businessman who said,
that's right,
I'm a Republican and she's a Democrat, but I always supported her because she was just such a good leader. And that's what we continue to see, was her bipartisan uniting effect and getting things done.
Now, the film does spend some time on the relocation to California, which was, I think at some point she says, you know, this was like our second Trail of Tears, because they were uprooted from Oklahoma, from her traditional, what had been her traditional land, Mankiller Flats, moved to California. And this, they went from a place where there was no running water, outhouses, no plumbing, indoor plumbing, to, you know, coming to an apartment house with an elevator and having to learn how to do that. That was a major, I could see where that was a major sense of dislocation and disconnection, really.
Well, and not only that, they really were dumped there. There was no support once they were there, and they lived in poverty. But the one thing about Wilma's story that we learned over and over again is she would have a negative situation happen to her, like this relocation, and she said she cried every day for a long time, and then she would turn it into a positive. So that experience really made her into the leader she was. And then she was very sick, and she turned that into a positive. So just one thing after another. So many people who have seen the film have said, you know, if she could do it, so can I. Just, you know, her ability and her attitude of positive thinking was just incredible.
Of course, now in hindsight, we think of her time as a really enlightened leadership of the Cherokee Nation, and that it was a great time for the Cherokee. Your film reminds us that at the time there was intense opposition when she came back to Oklahoma. She became a community leader. She became deputy chief. Was appointed chief when Ross Swimmer was appointed to the Reagan administration.
Right.
She decided to run for chief in her own right. Amazing amount of sexism against her becoming chief.
The sexism even surprised her. It was unbelievable. And when we were making the film, it was such an honor to actually be able to interview someone like Gloria Steinem, who became her advocate and her friend because the sexism was so rampant. And you know, Wilma even said, I thought people would want to talk about my ideas and my leadership. And she was ready for that criticism, but she wasn't really prepared for the amount of sexism aimed at her. But what we found so interesting in the story, and we pointed out, is she had so much opposition. That first ticket, Ross Swimmer, when he pulled her on the ticket, they won by 50.4%. I mean, they squeaked by. And her final election, she won by 82%. So she turned the nation around because of her positive leadership.
And what you also tell us is that at the very beginning, the Cherokee were a matrilineal society. Women held title to the land. Women held title to the homes in Georgia and in the East. And that had, and I believe one character in the film says, you know, in our traditional society, women were always there on location. Men would come and go. I think it's
the sun and the moon. Yes, yes. It was. It's a bit of folklore, but she said that the sun is female because the sun is always there, but the moon is male because it kind of comes and goes, and you never know if it's going to appear or not. And yes, a lot of Indian tribes in America were matrilineal, and the grandmothers had councils, and the women were the decision makers and the leaders. And
then of the home, the community, right?
Also of the tribe, And politically, women were always viewed as wise and stable and the life givers. And then things, obviously, with European influence got turned around a bit. So it was very tough for her. But I will add that one of the reasons we go back and look at Cherokee history, she asked in her biography, her autobiography before she passed away, she said, if anyone ever does a story about me, please, I want it to be about the Cherokee people, not just me. And so we were so thrilled that the Cherokee Nation opened their doors and their arms, and we were filming here. We filmed a lot in Oklahoma, not only on her land, but at the nation and at the museum and the cultural center. And so we tried to honor her wishes and show a lot about the history of the Cherokee people, which is an important part of her story.
Now, have you had a private showing for the nation, or will this be the first one here in Oklahoma?
This is it tonight.
This is the first screening for the nation, yeah.
Now, you have taken this film around to film festivals, right?
Yes, we were honored to have been selected to premiere the film at the Los Angeles Film Festival, which is a very large festival. The response and the reviews have been incredible. We had this special invitation to screen it for Congress, which we did last week, and that was an amazing experience, seeing bipartisan attendance. We had Tom Cole, who is a congressman from Oklahoma. He's in the film, and he did the introduction in Washington. And then Adam Schiff, who's a Democrat from Gale's district in California and very in tune with movie making and that type of thing. They were the two who introduced the film, so it was nice to have a bipartisan attitude.
Now, what's been the reaction? It's been 7 years since Wilma Mankiller's death here in Oklahoma. She's still a part of our, very much a part of our heritage. As you show the film around the country, what's the reaction? Is she being forgotten? Is she still remembered?
Well, I think one of the main reactions is thank you for making this film, because a lot of people had never heard of her. I realize that in Oklahoma, most people have heard of her, but you go around the country and it's an incredible void in the history books for a lot of Native American leaders, but especially someone that made such a difference. And a lot of women are really connecting to this film and to her, and they want to run for office and get engaged. And many people are just saying, thank you so much for making the film, because she's an important person to know about.
Yeah, well, we'll look forward to the showing tonight at 8 at the Circle Cinema. And Ben Arredondo, as the festival director of the Tulsa American Film Festival, this is just one of the highlights over the weekend.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're very excited to screen this tonight. It is the premiere. We have a lot of the Cherokee Nation people coming to the film, and you know, and they've been very supportive of the festival and of the screening, and it's going to be a big night at Circle Cinema. And I just wanted to also just note like how honored we are to have Valerie here and to be screening this film. You know, the film world, especially the documentary film world, is a small community, and you know, several of Valerie's friends are here that she's worked with in the past that have other screenings here. So that's going to be, it's going to be a little bit of a reunion tonight. Yeah, it's going to be fun. We have an after party in the Kendall Whittier right across from Circle tonight. It's open to the public. Desi and Cody are performing. And so thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, and you're going to have a whole list of events. Will most of the events be taking place at the Circle Saturday and Sunday?
Well, we have our Native program at the Gilcrease tomorrow. Uh-huh. We have tomorrow and Sunday. And we also have a screening of Mad Dogs and Englishmen at the Woody Guthrie Center
at 4
p.m. That'll be a lot of fun. We have our closing film at Circle Cinema, Mr. Roosevelt. We have two screenings tomorrow night, art documentary called Through the Repellent Fence, and a feature film called The Strange Ones at Circle Cinema tomorrow night.
And they can learn more at your website, which is
TulsaAmericanFilmFest.com.
And what are the future plans for Mankiller? Are you still on the film festival circuit, or will there be a showing on PBS at some point down the road?
Yes, a great question. So we are on the film festival circuit. From here, we go to New York and Colorado and Atlanta. And then it will air in March of 2018 for Women's History Month on PBS. And it will definitely be on your local PBS station here. And if you want more information about the film, it's mankillerdoc.com.
All right. Valerie, wish you great success with the film. Break a leg tonight with the premiere. And also to you, Ben, for the American Film Festival, which is continuing to grow. And it looks like you're moving out to more venues and getting more people involved. And kudos.
Thank you so much.
So, Ben and Valerie, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Ben Arredondo is the festival director of the Tulsa American Film Festival, which continues through the weekend at the Circle Cinema, Gilcrease Museum, and other venues around the city. And Valerie Redhorse Mull is the director and producer of the documentary Mankiller, which screens tonight at 8 o'clock at the Circle Cinema as a part of the festival. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks very much for listening.